Hey everyone, this is Allison Lee, the host of CraftCast, and on today's show I'll be talking with Patty Dye, author of Life is a Verb, as well as I have a featured book bonanza today, so let's get started. Show number 103.
Well, it's CraftCast. We'll have a blast. New ideas so easy and fast. Decoupage, how about a collage? Take a look, what's in the garage? Cropping, knitting, painting, sewing, fiber art, and clay molding. Beads, strings, and wire spools. Sequins, jewels, and some tools. You got your spray glue. You got your stencils, too. Anything creative and new. Cardstock or tracing paper. Grab some ribbons, stamps, and your stapler. On CraftCast, anything to sew or paste. On CraftCast, listen, learn, create.
Hey everyone, this is Allison Lee, the host of CraftCast. Back here in the CraftCast studio for another week, and I have to say that was a fast week. I was sitting here thinking, now wait a minute, what happened this week? You know, I don't know. That one blew by fast is all I can say. And I'm very glad that I teach outside of my studio here, because this forces me to actually get out in the world, get in real clothes, not just workout clothes, and function on a different level out there. So yeah, this week went by fast. But you know, I'm very excited because in 2 weeks where are we right now? February something, 20 something. The Oscars are tonight. So what is that? The 22nd. That the clocks are going to change in 2 weeks, which to me is just, oh, happy day. I just love the long, bright light day. I really do. I am ready to say bye-bye to gray and dark in the early evening. I don't know about all you out there, but frankly, I like a bright, sunny day. Makes me one happy crafter, one happy girl. So there you go. So what has happened this week? I've just been working in the studio a lot. I'm very excited. I'm thrilled. I'm having a great time. I am organizing all the new master classes here for CraftCast. And, you know, everything takes time. Gotta breathe. Sometimes I approach each day as I'm running to the finish line. That's probably not the best way to slide into bed at night. But it just seems like there's a lot to get done each day. So this week, I did line up. There will be 4 new classes. First coming up is the Amulets and Talismans. That starts. Isn't it terrible? I don't even know my own class dates by heart. I'm looking it up as we speak. I should write all these things just on my hand and have them at least temporary tattoos, which is getting very exciting. You know, the thought of sort of crafting your own amulets that way to me is always really cool. And our wonderful instructor, Robert Dansick, you always want to hang out with him. So make sure you don't miss that and sign up. That's a 3-session class, and that'll be starting March 2nd. And I'm excited to say there's already people signed up from around the world, which is really exciting. New software that should make classes now really fun and seamless to work on it. And on the 3-week classes, any classes that go more than one session, there'll also be a forum bulletin board so everyone can write in whatever's going on during the week, post their art, et cetera, et cetera. So that'll be fun. And then upcoming after that is a resin class. Mr. Seth Savrick will be teaching a 2-session class for that. And I talked a little bit about this, I think, in the last show. Love the resin. Excited. Then wonderful Sherry Hobb, who has been on the show and has written all kinds of wonderful books. She's going to be teaching an online basic for all of you out there who've always wanted to try precious metal clay. So all of you out there who just thought, you know, I just said out there. That was what accent was that? Out there. All of you out there who've been wanting to try precious metal clay. You know what I think it is? My lips are so dry from the heat that they sort of are sticking to my teeth. Not pretty at all. But Sherry's going to be teaching a basic precious metal clay class, which I took one a long time ago, so I'm looking forward to this because I can refresh and relearn new things and things that have changed. So get me started again. So stay tuned for that. And then I have an old friend from like first grade or something insane, Pam Corwin, and she's going to be leading us through a class that she gives on the West Coast, all over the West Coast, called How to Get into Retail. And then she'll be doing one, How to Get into Wholesale. Anyway, she is quite the woman to talk to about this neck of the woods. So all of you out there have been wondering, how do you even get started? And especially in today's world, you know, and I don't use the E word anymore. You know what I'm talking about. Because to me, it's just, it is what it is. Moving on. So now how should we do it in this climate? So that's going to be exciting. And then the wonderful Tim McCrade is going to be teaching a class, and it's going to be really interesting because it's going to bring in historic metalwork up to the present and really where the trends are now. I don't even like to use that word in that case, but what is happening now in metal. So Tim McCrate is going to be leading that. That is a do not miss 90 minutes. I've been laughing to myself. I haven't even shared this with him yet, but he's going to talk all about hammering metal and what that means in terms and history and how it started. So I started playing, of course, with the names of classes and talking to some friends. And so far we've come up with If I Had a Hammer and Hammer Time. So, you know, just having a little creative fun here, no matter what, in the Craftcast studio. So all those classes coming up, very exciting. And then those are definite with dates that will be on the site and announced soon. I just have to get all that website material done. They'll all be happening, though, within March and April. And what else? Oh, and there are more, though, in the works. I'm talking to other people as well. So very, very exciting to be able to share all that with you. It is really my total joy. So very exciting. All right. So on to some of the other books I wanted to talk about today. I said I had a little book bonanza of things, just, you know, books of different kinds. So which one do I want to start with first? Okay, I'm going to start with this one. It's called Picture This by Molly Bang. And actually, it was Mr. Danzig that told me about this book a ways back. And why I pulled this out, this is not a new book, but you can get it through Amazon.com. And you can also go to the Craftcast bookstore. I'm pretty sure I have it in there. It's about design. And as a teacher in metalsmithing, and we work on making jewelry, the concept of good design, of course, does come up. And, you know, I like to sort of separate it from, it's hard to ever separate it once you're a designer, but it is a different discussion. And this book really, in just some simple cutouts, if you've been thinking about design and what's that about and how to make, what does the flow mean in a design, et cetera, this is a great book, small paperback. And it's all done with cutouts, actually, illustrating Little Red Riding Hood with the wolf and some other simple graphics and just playing with shapes and basic colors, what happens. So I recommend that highly for your design library. Another book is, this is fun, you know, mixed media is, I guess, one of the, you know, big buzzwords, whatever it means. It's all mixed up. I call it sort of pot of soup graphics. And I'm a big fan of it. That's not a put down. This book was sent to me by Cheryl Prater, who is one of the co-authors of a book called Mixed Mania. Recipes for delicious. See, they're using the soup concept right there. Mixed Mania, recipes for delicious mixed media creations. I think this is a great book if you want to, if you have no idea what this is about too. It's a good beginner book for your library to really get inspired and to sort of get a handle on, okay, I want to play around in this. So what are some project ideas and what does that mean? So they give you lots of fun ideas. There's some talks with different artists in the back. And it's a really good way to sort of get going in this whole arena. So quite enjoyable. And Cheryl was very sweet and sent me one of her dolls that she made up, which I love hanging up in my studio. So that's a fun one. Check that out. That's pretty new. And then the Crafty Chica's new book, Kathy Cano Murillo. She was on the show a ways back, and she's known as the Crafty Chica with a wonderful blog. And this is her new book, Guide to Artful Sewing. You know, she's just great. She's great. Love all of her jean jacket ideas in there. She has her Latin flavor to everything. That's just so much fun. Lots of glitter. You know, what's not to love when it has a little glitter going on? So her book here is all easy to sew, fun stuff. So if you're into that and you want to have some easy projects that are great graphics, really fun type of things, check out Kathy's new book. I have to make sure and put that in the Craftcast bookstore. And then this is one for me personally that right up my alley for stuff that I'm doing right now. And this author, Patty Brady, who will be on the show in the near future, she has a new book out called Rethinking Acrylic, Radical Solutions for Exploiting the World's Most Versatile Medium. Think about that. And this really speaks to me quite a bit. And she, actually, I saw Patty at the CHA show last month. She works for, is work the right word? She's represents Golden, all of their art supplies. So she was there at their booth. And Patty does some amazing things with all these materials. Now, if you've never explored the Golden materials before and you've seen them in the art store, pick up this book. It is, you can use these materials, concepts, and techniques in any of the mediums you're working in. This will translate, you know, if you're, I don't care if you're scrapbooking, you know, if you're doing fiber art, whatever. It's pretty fabulous. And the actual materials, to me, I'm flipping through the book as we speak. The actual materials lend themselves to so many things. I mean, we use the polymer medium in our fiber class quite a bit. And, you know, there's just a lot of areas to explore. I'm just saying, the materials themselves. And Patty lays that all out, and that is pretty fabulous. Okay, so that's those. And then, of course, my guest today, Patty Dye, has a new book out that we're going to be talking about called Life is a Verb. So you want to put that on your definite list. Talk about an inspiring book. That's a really fun one to open anywhere. Sit down, cup of tea, sit down, be inspired. Love that. So, but before we talk to Patty, you know, I was thinking tonight's the Oscars, and I know I sometimes get a little bored watching too. I'm just admitting to it, but it is still a party about creativity, and I love that. So there isn't a bit about it that isn't somehow, you know, creative, from the clothes, the jewelry, that we're celebrating art that people made, you know, the whole thing. It's just, I just think it's a good way just to escape for a while. So that's tonight. And sort of in honor of the evening, I found this great song by an artist named Edie Carey. It's called Hollywood Endings. Appropriate. So I hope you enjoy that, and come on back, and I'll be talking with Miss Patty Dye.
Don't you just love a Hollywood ending? In the nick of time, she's gonna come through. But you can spend your whole life pretending it's gonna go that way for you too. Cause only you know her secret heart. She doesn't mean to be unkind. And the waiting is not so hard. What's a little more time? We're all fools for something. I'm smarter than this, or I swallow every lie. We're all Hey, I know just where you are. You ate up every last word, and you swore you'd never let it get this far, and you'd never get hurt. Hey, I know I can't change your mind, like you can't change your heart. Hey, I know the cliche, love is blind, but who knew it could be so dark? We're all fools for something. I'm smarter than this. Oh, I swallow every lie. We're all fools for something. She's your loveliest weakness. He was my longest goodbye. My heart is trying. Just love a Hollywood ending. In the nick of time, she's gonna come through. But you can spend your whole life pretending it's gonna happen and wait for you to. We're all fools for something. I'm smarter.
You know, whenever I start some of these interviews and I'm overwhelmed and I have about 20 questions to all come out of my mouth at the same time, I know I'm in for a really good interview. So I'm very excited today to talk to Patty Dye, whose new book, Life is a Verb. Plus, she has a great blog called 37 Days. I'm so excited. Patty, thanks for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you so much for the invitation. What a pleasure.
Yeah, and we met on Facebook.
We did meet on Facebook.
Which is so cool. I mean, I got your book in the mail, and I immediately looked at it and knew, okay, this is up my alley. And then we connect on Facebook, which I love that that's happening as well.
Yeah, it's a great, there's a huge community of people I've never met, but I feel like I know a lot about them.
Right? It's a great, it's really, really an amazing resource. And for me, I know it's just so much fun to connect with everyone. So my first, this is sort of one of my bones of contention, I think, that I just wanted to talk about, which is, do you know how tired I am of books like this ending up in the self-help section of bookstores? I want to puke. I'm so over it. And you know what? Here's what I'm excited about. I think, because of what's going on in our world today, that the self-help section should now be called the current event section.
Well, I have to tell you, it's so funny to hear you say that, because my husband can attest to this. I was just so overwrought with anxiety about the fact that I had written what people were calling a self-help book, because it never occurred to me that that's what I was doing. And I think it actually is a book that's hard for booksellers to categorize. I've had a lot of booksellers say to me that they don't know exactly where to put it, which is both good news and bad news.
I think so, too, because yeah. I think there'll be a new section. I mean, I remember in the beginning days it was called the New Age section. And I always found myself in a section called New Age. I wasn't sure exactly what it was. And then it was self-help, which you always sort of had to sneak over to.
Well, somebody called it not a self-help book, but a soul help book.
I saw that. I thought that was good.
Better.
Yeah. I thought it was good. I'm like so over that so self-help thing. It's like, you know, it makes you sound like, you know, pathetic or something. It's
well,
like,
you know, the thing that I have a problem with it is that it assumes that the answer to your questions are somewhere out there,
yeah,
and they're not.
Right.
You know, the answers are really in you. So that piece of it was disturbing to me.
And there you go. And there lies the whole nut right there. But it is good to go get that inspiration, I find, because sometimes we get off that track. And your book is certainly one of them, because you can sort of pop open to any page. You have an amazing selection of quotes, too, which I just love.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm a quote collector, so it was nice to be able to put them to good use. And actually, the publisher, there's a lot of art in the book, as I'm sure we'll talk about. The publisher said to me at one point, you can either have all the art or all the quotes, but you can't have both. So... So I have a big storeroom of quotes for the next book, I guess.
You do? Well, I like, this was one of yours that I highlighted in love. Change occurs at the edges without mm-hmm. permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what does that mean? Break that down. When I saw that, I did one of those, and that's why it feels the way it does.
Well, I don't think great change, you know, there's a great quote in here from a book that I love called Art and Fear.
Yes.
And
love, Ted.
What they're talking about is that... you know, financing for the revolution didn't come from the crown. That it wasn't the king and queen's best interest to fund a revolution, and that if we're going to effect big change in our lives, people are not going to give us permission for that. It's not in their best interest to have us change in any significant way.
Isn't that the hardest? When you're ready to change, it's hard for the people around you.
Well, I think it is. You know, and there's a great one of the stories that is so dear to my heart is one called Signal Your Turns, where I'm driving an old car of mine, and I think I'm signaling my turns, but somebody, a friend of mine, finally said after months, you know, your turn signals don't work. So it was a great metaphor for, I think I'm telling you what I'm doing and how I'm changing, and I'm not really. I you know, my turn signals aren't working, and you're confused, and you don't know if I'm turning or not. And so that idea of signaling is an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, it is, and it's a hard one, and it scares people. The truth of the matter is, don't change too much. Don't abandon this boat that we're all in together.
Well, I think change, you know, sometimes we've gotten used to the idea that change is fearful, and I'm not sure that that's actually always true, but that's the framing for it that we have in our minds, and it keeps us from changing, I think, a lot of times.
Well, that's exactly it. I think that once you do, it's a little addicting, too. There's a high to it. So once you do it. Well, now, all right, so your book, why don't you tell everyone who doesn't know what your inspiration was for your book?
I first started writing essays on a blog that's still going called 37 Days. And the story behind that was in October of 2003, my stepfather was diagnosed with lung cancer, and he died 37 days later. And that time frame was really shocking to me. I was really struck by how quick that was.
Yeah.
And on day 38 after he had died, I woke up and asked myself a question that I have asked every day since then, and that was, what would I be doing today if I only had 37 days to live? And it's a really hard question sometimes because the lunches still need to be packed for the kids at school. The laundry still needs to be done. You know, the things that we call mundane about our lives are the things that actually make up our lives. And that idea of looking at each day as a gift and really trying to investigate even the mess in my house, what do I learn from that? How do I make that precious in a way? And
right,
really looking for the extraordinary and the ordinary.
Do you feel, I know I do, that things that are just the mundane become pretty precious, especially when aware of the amount of time we have?
Well, I think that's true. You know, the 37 days before the book was published, I asked readers of my blog to send in essays answering the question for themselves, what would I be doing today if I had 37 days to live? And the responses were so beautiful and so overwhelming. I got thousands and thousands of essays, and I chose 37 of those essays to put up on the blog to count down those days.
Mm.
And the things that people would do were very small things. They weren't the big Chicago musical, travel the world, find my guru in
right,
India kinds of things. They were very small things. There's a story in the book that is really compelling to me. There was a young mother and her family who were hosted by Oprah a number of years ago, and she was dying. She was very young, dying of cancer. And she was spending her last months documenting on video her instructions, really, for her kids, which is really what I started doing. And they also went on a number of really amazing trips to Disney World and beyond. And after she died, Oprah, I'll never forget this, Oprah had the family back on. And she thought that they would really talk about these amazing trips they took. So she asked the children about the best memories of their mother. And the young girl said very quietly, "I remember one time when my mom asked me to get her a bowl of Cheerios and we ate them together."
I know.
And it was this huge recognition that it's not the big thing. You know, it's not the big trip. It's the sunlight coming in when you're washing the dishes.
Yeah.
It's a bowl of Cheerios.
It is. But you know what? Don't you think the times of what's going on now in the news and economy and blah, all the blah, 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 is going to make that real again for people?
I think it will. I got a lot of questions over the holidays and certainly for Valentine's Day of, you know, low-cost ways that you could say I love you. and a lot of my response was, do things with your family. You know, why are we constantly buying things and not just experiencing things with the people that we love?
It is so true. I'm a big fan of that, especially with my child. When we would be just sitting in the living room doing something that looks so absolutely boringly terrible, saying, you know what, this is as good as it gets. This is really fun. What are you thinking about? What are you eating over there?
Yeah, and I think that's what we come to. You know, I know in my stepfather's last days, there were a lot of conversations about very quiet moments.
Mm.
You know, not big moments, but very quiet ones. So, and I think we all know this. I think we know this.
I do too.
And we continue to forget it. And I think part of that is we're in such denial of death. You know, that to hold that vision in your head is difficult for people. And yet it can give such meaning to the days that you have.
Well, it's a way that death certainly of people and animals around you don't go to waste when you really then learn from it. I always feel that.
Right.
It's, you know, it's an inspiration. Now, I know you talk a lot about living with intention. Explain to people who say, I have no idea what that means. What's a layman's term of breaking that down?
I think it comes with an awareness of choice that, you know, I think a lot of times I do it myself and I see other people do it. We say, I can't believe that happened to me, or, you know, there's a sort of an awareness of forces beyond our control that are determining how our life goes. And it's really easy in difficult economic times, for example, to see that as true. Even in those times, we have great choice. A friend of mine was here visiting over the holidays, and I said to her, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're going to run a half marathon in 10 weeks. And she said to me, I am choosing to be energized by that time frame.
Right.
I thought, you know, that's a fantastic way of framing the day. I am choosing to be energized, or I'm choosing to be happy, you know. And that idea of, excuse me, of waking up and being mindful and really paying attention to the stories of our lives. A lot of folks say to me when they read this book and read 37 Days, oh, I'd love to write down my stories, but I don't have stories like yours. And my response is, we all have them.
Yes.
But we discount them.
Yes.
Because somebody else's story is more interesting, or somebody else's story is more glamorous, or they've traveled more than I have. So I think part of it is to be mindful of the choice and the fact that you are always in choice in your daily life.
And which I hate admitting this, but when you choose to be pissy, upset, and miserable, guess who did that?
Yeah.
And I think that is one of those, you know, once you get to that point, it's like, oh, why am I being this way?
Well, you know, perspective is a wonderful thing. Somebody once said perspective is worth 80 IQ points, and I think that's actually true.
Hmm.
You know, this idea, and the perspective of all this will go away. You know, I at some point will be on day one of my last 37 days, and this really won't have that much meaning.
Yeah.
It's really important. But I remember when I was 16 years old, I was an exchange student to Sri Lanka, had never heard of this country, got on a plane for the very first time in my life, and flew 12,000 miles away. I don't know how my mother did it. I have a 16-year-old now,
right.
And I would be having a heart attack.
Right.
But I remember going up in the plane, and it was a profound experience for me because I realized, and this sounds really simplistic, but I realized as I went up from the earth that things that I cared about or worried about, like who was going to take me to the prom, those were very tiny things once you get at 30,000 feet. I also realized on the other end of the trip that you have to land again, you know, that that stuff has to get bigger, that there has to be a balance between those two perspectives. And I think that's the challenge. You know, we get so enmeshed in these very difficult, complicated work situations. For example, I do a lot of work in corporations, and people are bloody miserable, you know, and so you get enmeshed in it, and I do too. I mean, I'm not,
right.
I
know.
Write about the things I need to learn. It's not like I'm
Mother
Teresa here.
Right.
So I keep writing about the things that I'm having trouble with or struggling with, and that idea of balance and perspective, it does matter, but it doesn't matter that much, and it's not worth giving up, you know, your integrity or your vision or your values.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I'm a big believer in every day. It's like, okay, well, this is as happy as I can be, so go for it type of thing.
I like that.
And really, when you go to bed at night, what would you rather prefer? So
I know.
It's just, you know, I have a little thing at night too. I like to applaud the day. So it's like, it's like this day gets a real standing ovation.
Yeah, my computer hard drive died yesterday. I'm not sure I'm applauding that day.
No. That's a hard one.
But I like it in theory. I really do like it in theory.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's not easy sometimes. The lessons are really just, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't think there's anybody who wrote one of those 37 days essays or who I talk to in speeches or the work I do that doesn't say that one of their core values is their family.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we live our lives as if that weren't true. One of the distinctions that I make is that we're either circumstance-driven or values-driven. So if you're values-driven and your family is one of your core values, it doesn't matter how the economy changes. It doesn't matter how your job is imposing on your free time. You're going to have the value on your family really ring true. Circumstance-driven, this is very true in the economic environment we're in now. A circumstance-driven decision is, I know I should be home for Timmy's 6th birthday, but my boss really needs me to go to Baltimore, and so that's where I'm going to go. That's a circumstance-driven life. And so the challenge is to try and stay true to the things that you value, even when circumstances change. The example I'll give you is a corporate America at this point is putting, because of the economy, is saying no more training budgets. You know, they may say we value learning, we want to be a learning organization, but when circumstances change, that value goes through the window.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I know it's... When you were just saying before about the circumstances, I mean, I can relate to that as well. And it's a hard switch to make, but it's an important one, and it certainly feels better in the long run, I think.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that we don't do that is that in this country in particular, we have so separated who we are as human beings and who we are as workers.
Isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really dangerous distinction. You know, I see it play out in many, many ways that it's not healthy for the workplace. It's as if we could become something different when we go to work. Less human, less humane, less relationship oriented.
I think it also becomes a habit because people become that other persona in that work environment.
I think that's true.
And then it's almost like becomes a place to let out all the abuse and all of that type of thing.
It may be.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting how that happens.
Well, I think if we ask ourselves at work, what is the quality of my relationship with the people around me? And I don't think we ask that a lot.
No.
It's like it's as if that having been determined by an organization chart relieves us of the necessity to be human.
Yeah. No, it's a place to hide out.
It is.
And I think there's some safety to that. So because I know in my experience and working and teaching that, you know, a lot of people need that structure. They're just not going to be happy in the entrepreneurial or, you know, on your own kind of structure.
Right.
It just helps to be in that and you can hide out there. Now for you, did you always feel you were a writer?
I've written two other books. They're business books. A couple of years ago, my business partner and I were on a retreat figuring out our business and really thinking about what we wanted to create in the world. And late one night, he said to me, you know, when you meet people and they ask you, what do? Why do you never say, I'm a writer? And I said immediately without thinking about it, oh, well, David, I'm not a writer. I'm not And he looked at me and he said, let me just ask you a question. You've written 3 books. You've published hundreds of articles. So what bar are you trying to jump over that would allow you to say, I'm a writer? And it really made me think, like, what was it? Was it the New York Times bestseller list?
Right.
Or what was that
right.
sort of measurement? So the next day we went to lunch in Santa Fe with a guy, and he turned to me at one point during lunch and said, Patty, what do you do? And because David was watching me, I said very proudly, well, I'm a writer. You know, like, oh, ho, ho.
Right.
And he turned back to me and he said, well, what do you write? And I said, without thinking, oh, I just write these little essays every Monday. So after lunch, David said to me, oh, so you just write these little essays for this language. And I see it a lot with artists, actually.
I was just going
to
say,
retreat.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the retreat and they say, I'm just an artist.
Right,
or,
right.
So that minimization of who we are in the world is
right.
kind of... it doesn't happen when we're a kid. You know, if I say to my 5-year-old, are you an artist? Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Did you know you were beautiful? Yes, I did.
Yes.
You know? So somehow along the road, we lose that.
It's so true. It's so true. And it's just then hard to spend the rest of your life getting back to that time when you can just say, yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the impulses, you know, somebody said to me about the premise for this book, well, that's really, that seems depressing to think about the end of your life. I said, this is not a book about dying. It's actually a book about living.
Right.
You know, and how do you regain, there are a number of stories about Tess, my smallest, both my daughters, Emma and Tess, but certainly Tess at this stage in her life, that sort of reclaiming that exuberance is powerful.
Well, hanging out with kids is one of my favorite things when I worked in my last career. Directing kids is really, it keeps you real because they don't play the corporate game.
No,
they just say it as it is.
I would, you know, it's scary for me to work with kids much more than with corporate audiences because they're so truthful.
Oh yeah, they are.
And I love that. But boy, you really have to jump in there.
You do. I would love working with them on set and all, you know, and one would just say, start crying. I am too tired to do this. I'd be like, you know, I am too. Let's sit down and have just some cookies and take a second, you know? And it's just, I love that.
Well, it's very honest.
It is.
Very, very honest. And so part of the process, I think, is, you know, how do I reclaim that? Because when we reclaim that as adults, people look at us like they're going to call 911.
I know,
there's a piece in the book, I remember telling the story, there was a little boy all the way from D.C. to Dallas one time, stood up on the seat in front of me on the plane and just stared at me.
Right.
And I remember thinking, that is so fantastic, but if his middle-aged father did that,
oh,
I would
yeah.
be calling for the flight attendant,
you know?
So how do you reclaim that curiosity
yeah.
and that sense of joy?
And still not be taken away in the padded car, which, you know, I understand that because I've certainly pushed the edge of that myself. And it's just once you go there, it's very hard, though, to go back to the other
yeah.
way. So you start pushing the edge like that. And people will call is what
yeah,
I'm saying. Yeah.
yeah,
they will call occasionally.
And that's okay.
It is, as long as you end up in a nice place for a weekend
something
or something.
Something else to write about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all part of that. And I think it is. It's all about living. It's not about dying. Sometimes I panic when I see how many more people I have to talk to. And it's like, okay, if I have this many more years to live, how many people do I have to talk to a day?
Right.
And squish it all in. There is no time to be bored. All right, so let's just go over some of your, I love all your chapters, and I know it's your... six, I don't know, what do you want to call them? Your 6 themes?
Practices,
yeah. Which I like. So you want to just go over those for everyone, because I think it gives you great ways to start an action if you're like, well, this is all fun what you're talking about, but what does that mean?
Okay, yeah, I'll do it real quickly.
Okay.
And the first one was to say yes, and this really very much is child-based. You know, how is it that kids just say yes to the world as opposed to no or yes but?
So let's give a real good example of that for you.
My husband, when we were living in D.C., right at the time 9/11 occurred, and then the year after when the snipers, I don't know if your listeners remember this, but snipers were killing people willy-nilly in Washington, D.C., and I'll never forget my husband, we had to rent a car in the middle of this, and it was very scary. I mean, literally people were running from their door to their car, and nobody was pumping gas or they were doing it in $2 increments and hopping as they pumped gas so that they would be a moving target. I mean, it was that bad. And in the midst of this, we needed to rent a car. So my husband goes to Hertz and he comes back with this brilliant smile on his face. And he says, oh my God, I got a fantastic deal. And I look out, and there's a red convertible. And I'm thinking to myself, why not just paint like a target on our heads and get it over with? Are you kidding me? And he was just saying, yes, you know what? We got a great deal. We're going to ride around.
Right.
Emma will have a great time, and we're not going to get assassinated.
Right.
So the idea of accepting the offer that's made to you,
right,
you know, and not staying inside of four walls for,
right,
weeks on end, is one way of kind of jumping into life.
Yes, I agree. Something comes along, and you're so used to always saying, which is, there's important for,
yeah,
can't do that. And it is important for people who overextend themselves. I'm not saying that, but, you know, there's things that come along and you just think, no, I can't, I'm too busy, I can't, rah, 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 rah.
Well, and I think the other piece of that is to know why you're saying yes and know why you're saying no.
Yes, yes.
And that's the mindful piece.
Right.
You know, what are your criteria?
Right.
Saying yes.
Right, yeah, that's
a big piece of it.
Right, that is important.
Yeah.
Okay.
So another one is to be generous. And this is not to give things, you know, necessarily. It's not really to be part of a gift economy, but it was really intended to teach my daughters, because all these essays were written for them as challenges for them. How can I allow for the fact that the person who is homeless in Pritchard Park downtown is as human as I am?
Mm-hmm.
How can I be generous and grant as much specificity to that person as I do to myself? And this idea of, one of the essays is called Redefine Normal, that my normal is not the normal of my transgender friend in Whole Foods, who everybody is staring at,
right,
for example, and that I have to allow for the fact that there's a generosity of spirit I need to have in the world. And also there's a story in here about a friend of mine, Yaron, who I met on a plane and completely dismissed. He just was too big, too loud, too everything, and became one of my great friends in life, having met him on a plane. So that sort of staying with and opening up the possibility of relationship became important.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that has been really important for me is this idea of speaking up. You know, what do you believe in, and how do you let that be known in the world? It's clear in the work I do around diversity that we need better capacity for example, responding when people tell a racist joke or a blonde joke or whatever,
mm-hmm,
you know, that is there a way that I can speak up but also allow for the possibility that my truth is not yours?
Right.
And that my attachment to being right is causing me to suffer in some cases. So the idea of, you know, really looking at what are the rules by which I'm living my life and how am I allowing for the fact that your rules might be different, and how can we navigate those two things?
Right.
Another one was to love more, and much of this was, can you love yourself more? One of the stories in this section is called Burn Those Jeans. I have a pair of blue jeans that I've carried around for 30 years from high school. They're beautiful Levi's, exactly the right shape, and, you know, the knees are worn, and fantastic blue jeans. And I have literally carried them around the world. I've traveled to 60 countries. They have gone with me everywhere I've gone.
Mm.
And I had them in my closet one day when Emma was 11 or 12 years old. She was very active, soccer, you know, kind of person. She came running and she said, I don't have any pants to wear. And these blue jeans have been too little for me since high school.
Oh, okay.
Too little. And so I haven't worn them for 30 years.
Okay.
But I've carried them around. So she came in and she said, I don't have any pants to wear. And I handed them to her and I said, these will be too big, but, you know, you can wear them with a belt and bring them back because I'm going to wear them one day. So she came back in a few minutes. She threw them on the bed, and she said, they're too small, and she left. And I stood there with these blue jeans and realized that for 30 years I had tried to fit into a pair of blue jeans that my 12-year-old couldn't fit into. And it was this great recognition of what is the measurement of my worth in terms of size or pant size, and, you know, why am I paying attention to other people's perspectives on how I should look? So this idea of loving more, not only was one of the essays is love unlovable people, you know, it's easy to love lovable people,
right,
it's harder to love unlovable people.
Oh, yes.
But also just for myself, can I love myself more? And there are two more. One is trust yourself. I think this is, particularly in a world where we look for quantifiable evidence of things, the idea that your gut reaction to something isn't valuable is really out there in the world. And so this was, you know, can you pay attention to your own gut instinct about things and just trust that you know what you need to do? This is back to our self-help conversation. The answer is not out there.
Right.
It's actually in you.
Well, it's so important for artists as well, because so many artists struggling with, they don't trust their own intuition about their work and just moving forward in it.
Well, I think one that I see with artists, and I've talked a lot about this with David, who's a theater director, but also a painter, my business partner. And we create these stereotypes, really, in our minds of what artists are or writers. So, you know, starving artist is it's something that actually keeps us out of the work that we are to do sometimes.
Right.
And so those kinds of trusting ourselves about those things becomes really important also. And then the last one is a really hard one for most people, especially my corporate audiences, and that is to slow down. But sometimes the action we need to take is the opposite of what we think we need to take. There was a young woman on a ship I worked on that traveled around the world, and I noticed a couple ports into it that she had never left the ship. So I found her on the promenade deck, and I said, you know, what's the deal? How can I help you? We had set up all these trips in port, but she never went. And finally it came out that she was afraid she'd get lost.
Mm.
And I said to her, how old are you? She was 20. What do you think the life expectancy of a woman in the U.S. is? She said, well, maybe 80. I said, do you think you'll stay lost for 60 years? So this idea of, you know, slow down, look at how you are in the world, question some of the rules, quote unquote, I'll get lost.
That's a great one to think about. I've heard, especially, I think, women say that. I'll get lost.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you'll stay lost for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know? It would be a rare occurrence for that to happen. And so the stories, there's, I think, six stories in each of the sections. They're just stories that reflect that practice, give it some real life, you know, experience around it. And also there are challenges at the end of each story. So ways to embed that in your own life.
Oh, no, the book is great with all, yeah. There's tons of exercises and fun things to do.
Yeah.
Now, do you have to share with everyone what your, do you have a daily practice of any kind?
Well, I do ask the question, what would I be doing today if I only had 37 days to live? That's my first question when I wake up.
Okay.
And a lot of times the answer is, well, this may not actually be what I would be doing, but here's what I am going to do. You know, there's a sort of mindfulness about what it is. And it's not just a to-do list. You know, I think
right.
we get lost in this morass of lists of things that we need to do and not necessarily ways we need to be. So a lot of my practice is looking at the quality of the relationship of everybody I meet. So mm-hmm. whether it's the janitor in the building that I'm visiting or checkout person at the grocery store, you know, how do I enhance the quality of that encounter?
Right.
It becomes much more important to me than what the things are that I need to get accomplished in my life. So that asking that question, then I do morning pages because I think there's something to be said for unconscious writing.
Oh, you do? The old Julia Cameron start off artist's way.
Yeah, because I think that there's a lot that sort of comes out. And some of that writing is writing for 37 days. Ultimately, you know, a story
right.
will pop out. But a lot of it is not.
Right.
It's simply the practice of moving the hand across the page.
Right.
So those are the two main hallmarks.
Main.
And then I think there are certainly some non-negotiables for me in terms of how I make decisions on what I do and don't do. For example, I will never accept, I don't care if it's the Queen of England who's asking me to come speak, I won't accept a speech on a day when there's a band concert. So, you know, those are just, when Emma, my oldest, was in the third grade, I think, very rarely, but this one day, neither my husband or I could be at a show that they were doing at school. And she came down to breakfast and sort of pouted, and she says, I'm not going to participate if none of my people can be there. And I've never since then missed a
It's so important. I have a son who is a working actor, and so there was billions of performances growing up. And not too long ago, I actually did have to miss something, and it brought me back to, I'm not missing it again. I mean, there's something coming up next month, and I just said, no, this is the stuff that you don't want to forget. I agree with you. This is the important stuff no matter what. Well, I read that... Are you in New York yet, or you're coming to New York, correct?
Yeah, I'll be there on Monday, actually.
I read, so I want to wish you good luck. You don't even need good luck for what's coming up. You're already in it, and it sounds great. I just want to read. It is a finalist. Your book, Life is a Verb, is one of five finalists in the Inspirational Memoir category of Books for a Better Life Awards. That's a good category. Better Life. That's better than self-help. along with, and I don't know how to say Randy's last name, who wrote The Last Lecture.
Randy Pausch,
which is wonderful as well. So, you know what? It doesn't matter if you win or not. You're there, and you're being looked at in a great category. So congratulations on that.
Thanks. I'm very excited because I'll meet my older daughter, Emma, there, and we'll spend a couple days in New York. So
it's all great.
Win or lose. Fantastic.
Yeah, you're already winning there. So that sounds wonderful. So, well, thank you so much for coming on with Craftcast. I knew it would be great fun talking with you. So let me just go over again. Your blog is 37days.typad.com.
You can get to it by just doing 37days.com.
Okay. And then your book, Life is a Verb, the links will all be on the Craftcast site so people can see everything there. And it's easy to find at any bookstore or online shopping experience. Well, thank you. Have a great mindful day.
Thanks.
And I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Patty. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that. I know talking to Patty Dye was lots of fun for me, lots of fun. And, and sometime in the not too far off future, I'm talking to Patty about setting up a masterclass with her. So stay tuned for that information as well, because that would be great fun. So everyone, make sure you go out and get a copy of Patty's book, Life is a Verb, 37 Days to Wake Up, Be Mindful, and Live Intentionally. So there you go. All right, so I was also thinking about today's entertaining thought section of the show, and I was thinking about a video I saw. Any of you, if you're familiar with the website TED.com, you know, I don't even know the background behind TED.com. I'm sure there's someone named Ted, and it's probably, you know, some like the Ted that I just don't know offhand, but I love listening to the speakers and the the videos they put up on YouTube from that site. Fabulous people. I was listening today to Milton Glaser. If you don't know who he is, check that out. Wonderful. And just a bunch of other people. But then I came across one that's Elizabeth Gilbert. And Elizabeth Gilbert wrote Eat, Pray, Love. If you're familiar with that book, I need to say no more. If you're not, that became a very big bestseller, all about her travels, finding herself in her life and her travels, India and wherever else. I didn't read the book, but I read a lot about the book, but it's all about her process of self-discovery. So it was an enormous success, as she says in her video, a freakish success. So it's a wonderful, and I highly recommend you go find that video of her talking about the creative process and what it's like for her now after having this freakish success. And any project she does after that will now be measured against that one. And really what the whole creative process is about, and how in Roman times, the creative, the genius, resided somewhere in, your closet, like a ghost type of thing, and was there to help you in your creative process. And so when people would say, what a genius, they were accrediting not you necessarily, but your muse, your genius that lived under your bed. And the same thing went true if it didn't go so well. Well, then obviously your little genius wasn't feeling so well. So you never got full blame or full acknowledgement for it, which really protects the artist in the creative process. So, and not so much the case now. So it's just very interesting to think about that. And what she talks about is, as creative people, our job is to show up. Our job is just to show up and do our job. And that to me is, I can put that little sign up on my desk. Do your job. That's it. It doesn't really matter really what anyone else says. You know, my job is to do Craftcast, and I show up and I do that. And I just know that. I know that's true. I know because it's so. I'm passionate about it. I know from hearing from people, it's an important thing. So my job is to show up and just do this. And that gives a lot more freedom and secure feeling when you look at it that way, as opposed to having to measure up to something. Is it creative enough? Is it this enough? Enough, enough, enough. It's to show up and do your job. Do your job well? Absolutely. Do your job the best you can. Show up and do your job. So there you go. Those are my words of wisdom this week. Show up and do the best darn job you can do. End of story. And at the end of the day, go home and have a nice big piece of chocolate. Oh, yeah. It's the little things in life. That's all I got to say. All right. So that's it this week here at the Crazy Craftcast Studio. And I just want to thank all of you for listening in. And from hearing from all of you, darn, that makes my day special when I get to hear from all of you and what's going on and what you got out of the different wonderful people I have on the show here with me. So that being said, make sure you come to the Craftcast site. The class right now that's up is Amulets and Talismans, starting in the first week in March. And a three-class session, and then shortly, hopefully, as soon as I get all that coordinated within the week, there'll be lots of other classes to sign up for. So all very exciting, great ways to learn new things and spend time with great people and don't even have to leave home or spend lots of money. So there you go. All right, so I hope you have a great week. Make sure you come over to the Craftcast site, to the blog, to the daily blog, where you can check out all kinds of craziness that happens here during the day, if you'd like that. A little bit of entertainment when you want to take a break. And if you haven't done so already, go to the iTunes, where you can subscribe to Craftcast, which is really what the deal is there, if any of you are still wondering, is you just go to the iTunes, you find the Craftcast page by going into the search, and then once you're there, you push the subscribe button, and that way, every time there's a new show, it downloads automatically into your iTunes library, so you can put it on your iPod or just listen on your computer. So take advantage of that. Oh, I think that's enough, right? So you know what I have to say. Get that butt in the chair and keep crafting.